Ever been called a very derogatory name? I'm not talking about just someone joking around. I mean, I'm talking about someone seriously calling you a name that was just really distasteful and, as I said, derogatory, especially when you don't deserve that, when you're innocent of what is being accused, what you're being accused of. There's a couple things, as I was writing this here, there's some things I hate being accused of. And I'm talking, again, not just jokingly, but seriously. I hate being accused of being a cheater. I don't cheat. That's just one thing I don't do. I don't cheat in games. I don't cheat in life. I hate being called a liar. I don't lie. Someone might think that I'm lying at times, but that's not what I do. It's just not my nature to do so. I hate being called that. I hate being called a thief. There's one thing I don't do is stealing. I don't steal. And so when people call me a thief, especially if they mean it, that just burns me up. And I'm not a false teacher. That's one thing I've been called a number of times in the pulpit and privately. I've been called a false teacher. And I can't tell you how that just burns me up to hear that. I'm not a false teacher. There might be disagreements that people have with me over understandings of maybe what I said or even my personal views, my personal convictions. But I am not a person who knows the truth and is purposely teaching otherwise. That's a false teacher. That is what I am not. The thing I'm bringing up here is that we live in a culture of great disrespect. We live in a culture today that is a vulgar, profanity-spewing, typecasting, character-assassinating, judgmental people. And anyone who stands up for God, stands up for the truth, stands up for law, and stands up for moral values becomes a target of those very hateful, judgmental people. And what that means then is that if you or I are going to stand up for God, the truth, law, and moral values, we are going to be targeted by those people, I should say. We're going to become the recipients of someone else's scorn, someone else's hate, and someone else's false accusations. And of course, I was thinking about Jesus. That's what this lesson is about. Was Jesus ever called something derogatorily? Was his name ever slandered? Was he ever falsely accused? Was he ever the target of scorn and contempt? Was he hated without a cause? And you see that he was. And that just burns me up to see that. And, you know, I'm not putting myself on par with Jesus. In fact, quite the opposite. Reason why it makes me so angry to see that is because I know that I'm not perfect. And I know that I did say something that sounded wrong. I said it wrong. You know, I said it out of context, whatever. I can make mistakes and people can latch on to that. But Jesus made no mistakes. He is perfectly innocent. And during his ministry, there were many who saw him, many who met him and heard him and touched him and were the recipients of his healing. And it says of them that they were amazed by this. And they called him things like the prophet and the Christ and a man of God and teacher and the son of David and even the son of God. But there are also unbelievers and detractors and the self-serving bunch of people that surrounded him. Often this was the Jewish leadership who looked upon all the attention that Jesus was receiving and the multitudes that were following him with envy, jealousy, and scorn. Jesus represented to them not someone to worship and follow. He represented someone of a threat, somewhat of a threat, and someone who was interference in their lives. And these latter people called Jesus some awful names to his face. And they said some awful things of his character, even though the Father was well pleased with his beloved Son. And these people were not afraid to accuse Jesus of being in league with Satan of all people. And we think, well, the world hates Christians, and that's true. It's becoming more and more evident every day. But we just read in John 15, verse 18 through 24, the world actually hates Jesus. And it hates us only because we agree with Jesus and only because we associate with him. And while we might feel sorry for ourselves over what we have to face as Christians in this increasingly godless world, we are not innocent of all wrongdoing. We came out of that same world that now holds God and Jesus in contempt. We're kind of like that thief on the cross where we deserve to be there. We deserve what we're getting. And then we come to our senses and we realize that, hey, we should change our mind about things. And we did, any of us who are Christians. But we used to be there. But Jesus is perfectly innocent of all crimes, undeserving of any contempt that was cast upon him. A lesson like this, it needs to focus on what he endured for you and I. And as we go through this list, I want you to keep in mind that all these accusations I'm going to talk about came from the Jews. And that's important because these were Jesus' own countrymen. These were the ones who were supposed to, of all the people on the face of the earth, support him and be in, well, I'm looking for a different word than support here, but they should be endeared to him. They were the ones to whom he made a physical appearance. They were the one who literally saw his miracles. They heard his voice. They heard his teaching. They benefited. They heard him. They witnessed what no one else in the world has seen. What we long to see today, they saw that. And many of them walked away in contempt. Matthew chapter 9, verse 34, as well as chapter 12, verse 24, after casting out demons, the Pharisee says, well, the reason he does this is because he's in league with the ruler of the demons. Beelzebul is the name they use. It's an ancient name. It actually literally translates Lord of the Flies. And that's what Jesus was called, the Lord of the Flies, by casting out these demons from these individuals who were demon-possessed. I want you to just think about that for a minute. These people are witnessing miraculous power as never seen before. Demons being cast out by one's own authority. The Jews would go through very elaborate rituals in their exorcisms and try to, through adjurations, which are formal oaths, they would try to get demons cast out of people. Jesus comes along and by his own authority says, come out of him, and the demons come out. They have never seen this before because it's never happened before in all of human history. And yet they see this and they say, well, instead of giving tribute to God, credit to God, they attribute that power to Satan. And it goes beyond this lesson, but Jesus goes on in those passages to destroy their argument with critical thinking and an appeal to Scripture. But just think about how much that must have hurt, how much that must have pained him. In Luke chapter 7, verse 34, Jesus is accused of gluttony, someone who gorges himself with food and drink, and being a drunkard. And this is not based on any facts or any evidence, but simply because he befriended sinners. Here's a man who, in their opinion, is guilty by association. He's guilty until proven innocent. It's like he can't win here. No matter what he does, he's found guilty in their eyes. John chapter 8, verse 13, Jews called Jesus a liar. They said, your testimony is not true, despite all the evidence that he provided to show that his testimony was true. The fulfillment of scriptures, the working of miracles, and these people still weren't convinced. But if someone inferior to Jesus came along, they accepted that person without proof. And that's still happening today, by the way. Jesus is cast aside, disregarded, and people are saying, well, there's just no proof that we need to believe in him. Some other guy comes along and touts some theory or prophesies some prophecy or says some things that sound, you know, like what people want to hear, and they just follow after him or her. This is especially true in the case of where they tried to bait him to speak against Caesar. There in Matthew 22, verse 15 through 22, shall we pay taxes to Caesar or not? You might remember that case there. Caesar had no evidence that he was worthy of his position of authority, but the Jews still obeyed him and still paid taxes to him. Jesus comes along, goes to great lengths to prove his authority, and most walk away going, I'm not convinced, and I'm not going to honor him, and I'm not going to obey him. In fact, during the trials, Jesus' trials, the people said to Pilate, we have no king but Caesar. There in John 19, verse 15. Don't you just think about that? That Jesus said to Pilate, I was born to be a king. And then his own people, of all the people on the face of the earth who should have accepted him as their king, they're the ones who rejected him as their king and put him up on a cross. In John chapter 8, verse 48, they call Jesus a Samaritan. You and I probably don't understand the full implication of that. It's a very derogatory term. It's an epithet. It's like calling Jesus a very nasty name. The Jews hated the Samaritans. And by the way, the Samaritans hated the Jews right back in most cases. But the fact is, there is a lot of animosity between the two groups there. And they are basically saying, in saying that you're a Samaritan, they're saying you're one that we loathe and despise. And along with that, they said, and demon-possessed. Not only is Jesus allegedly casting out demons by the power of Satan, but now he is possessed and controlled by Satan. This is nothing short of blasphemy. In John chapter 9, verse 24, the Pharisees say, well, he is a sinner. And they're saying that to the man who was born blind, but then was healed by Jesus. And then they accost him and try to get him to recant and try to, you know, sell Jesus out, so to speak. He goes on to say, the man born blind who was healed, he goes on to say, well, whether he's a sinner or not, I don't know. But here's the thing. I was blind and now I see, and he's the one that did that. But the Pharisees don't want to hear that. And so they call him a sinner because, they say, he does not keep the Sabbath. In reality, Jesus says, I am the Lord of the Sabbath. He says that in Matthew 12, verse 8. And he did much good on the Sabbath. What they were all rankled by was that he didn't keep their expectations of how the Sabbath was to be kept. The Jews had 39 laws that they put around the Sabbath law. God said, observe the Sabbath, and they had 39 laws that had to be kept in order to honor that one law, in their minds anyway. And so they put their law on par with God's law and then held the Son of God of all people to their law. And then said, well, since you don't keep our law, you're a sinner. Just think how that sounds. In John chapter 10 and verse 20, they say of Jesus, he is insane or mad. The Greek word there that is being used is the word, the literal English word from which we get the word maniac. He's a maniac. He doesn't make sense. He's irrational, and therefore he's not believable. He's not credible. In fact, it's the same Greek word that Festus later used in Acts 26, verse 24, to Paul when he says, you are out of your mind. Your great learning has made you go insane or go out of your mind. You're insane. You're a maniac. You're unreliable, irrational. And here, this is being said of Jesus, who is the one person in all of human history who has brought heavenly truth to us and disclosed us what God says. John chapter 15, verse 25, Jesus told his disciples, he says, they, the Jews, hated me without a cause. They have no justifiable reason for this hatred, for this scorn, except that it flew, what he said, it flew in the face of their expectations, their desires, and what they believed to be true. Because Jesus so offended the Jewish leadership, they were not merely content to call him names and accuse him of crimes. They sought instead to eliminate him altogether, to kill him. Matthew chapter 12, verse 9 through 14, because Jesus healed on the Sabbath, which they called a crime, by the way, it says that they conspired against him as to how they might destroy him. Again, just think about this. Here is the Savior of the world who has come to his people, the Jews, his own countrymen, to save those people, and they sought instead to destroy him. The world is so backward. We think sometimes, because we're told this by the world, that it's God who's backward, that the world is going forward and God's trying to take everyone in the opposite direction. It is quite the opposite of that. God is going in a forward direction. The world is in a backward state of mind. Jesus ought to have been regarded as a hero of the Jews, and instead they couldn't wait to kill him by any means possible. In Luke chapter 11, verse 53 through 54, This is after Jesus had raised Lazarus from the dead. It says, when he left there, the scribes and the Pharisees began to be very hostile and to question him closely on many subjects, plotting against him to catch him in something he might say, so that, of course, they might sentence him to death. The scribes and the lawyers are highly educated experts in the law of Moses, and they truly thought that they were smarter than Jesus. And they assumed that it was just a matter of time before Jesus says something that we can catch him in. Something he's going to slip up. They're going to expose him and then be able to put him to death based on something that he said. In John chapter 11, verse 49 through 53, after he raised Lazarus from the dead, you know, I said that Luke 11, that was after Lazarus. That wasn't. It was John here that we're getting to. John 11, chapter 49 through 53. After Jesus raised Lazarus from the dead, and keep in mind, Lazarus had been in the tomb for 4 days, and there were many witnesses to all of this, not only to his death, but also to his burial and to the funeral that was going on when Jesus arrived. The Jewish leadership, including the high priest, were unable to dispute the miracle. Just think about this. They never said he didn't create a miracle here by raising Lazarus from the dead. They were unable to dispute that. But they feared the implications of everyone following Jesus. They were threatened by the people and threatened with their political power being eroded. And thus the high priest said, it is expedient for him to die. And it says then they planned together to kill him. In fact, if you go into John chapter 12, you'll find out that not only were they planning to kill Jesus, they were planning to kill Lazarus as well. Because so many people were following after him. Because he had been raised from the dead. And at the time of Jesus' arrest and trial and sentencing, the Jews said to Pilate, there in Luke chapter 23, verse 2, they said here, I just want to read that. Luke chapter 23 and verse 2. They said, they began to accuse him, saying, we found this man misleading our nation and forbidding to pay taxes to Caesar and saying that he himself is Christ, a king. Now, this is just sheer lying and misrepresentation. He's not misleading the nation. If anyone's misleading the nation, it's the Jewish leadership. And he didn't forbid anyone to pay taxes. He said, render to God what is God's and render to Caesar what is Caesar's. And he is the Christ. By every measure, he is fulfilling the scriptures about the Christ, and he is a king, but he's not an earthly king, so there's no threat to Caesar. So this is just sheer fabrication, sheer manipulation, sheer misrepresentation. But that doesn't stop them from saying these things. These are just lies and gross distortions of the facts. But these people are not interested in the truth. All they want to do is gratify their anger, their jealousy, and their hatred. In Matthew chapter 26, verse 59 through 61, that you see on the screen there, it says that many false witnesses came forward, but no two men said the same thing. This is a kangaroo court. This is just a mockery of justice. Finally, two men came up and said, well, Jesus claimed he would destroy the temple. Of course, the temple he's referring to was his body. The temple they're referring to is the Jewish temple. But since they could not catch Jesus in a lie, they basically made up their own. They made up their own lie. In Matthew 26, verse 65, the high priest and the Jewish council declared Jesus guilty of blasphemy. Blasphemy literally means speaking evil of God or of his law. It means to profane that which is holy. And the fact is, three times in Jesus' ministry, God the Father himself had declared his favor for his son. Once at his baptism, secondly on the Mount of Transfiguration, and thirdly in John 12, when Jesus says, glorify your name, and God says, I will glorify it, and I have glorified it, and will glorify it again. Three times God had said that he found favor with his son. Jesus never violated a single law of the law of Moses. If he had, he couldn't have died a worthy death. And God could not have said he was well pleased with him. Matthew 27, verse 63, after the crucifixion, the Jews refer to Jesus as a deceiver. They actually call him that because he claimed to rise from the dead 3 days after his death. And so they had a seal and a guard put at his tomb. I want you to think about that. They accuse him of being a deceiver. Now turn with me, if you will, to Matthew chapter 28 and see what it says here. Matthew 28, verse 11. Now, while they were on their way, some of the guard came into the city and reported to the chief priests all that had happened. In other words, they saw the angels, they saw the tomb opened up, and they saw all of this. And when they had assembled with the elders and consulted together, they, the elders and the council, gave a large sum of money to the soldiers and said, you are to say, his disciples came by night and stole him away while we were asleep. And if this should come to the governor's ears, we will win him over and keep you out of trouble. And they took the money and did as they had been instructed. And this story was widely spread among the Jews and is so today. What just happened here? They're accusing Jesus of being a deceiver. And they couldn't prove that, so they went out and caused their own deception. They bribed the soldiers. They spread lies, rumors and lies, and just distorted justice. These are supposed to be the men of the highest positions of justice and authority in the Jewish culture. And this is what we get. This is what Jesus was faced with. And they are showing their true character. I'm saying all this because look what's happening in our world right now. We are being faced with all of these same sort of things. If you look on social media, if you listen to the media at all, the news, if you listen to the political pundits, if you listen to the late night talk show hosts, you're hearing and seeing the exact same things being done. Lies, propaganda, misrepresentation, name-calling, ad hominem attacks, which is Latin, ad hominem means to the person. Since we can't win the argument, we're going to destroy the person's character. That's really what that refers to. And what does this mean to you and me? I've been saying for years and continue to say, the world is not getting friendlier toward Christians. It is getting critical and mean and hateful. More and more so, and by an alarming rate of speed, I might say. The ungodly world being comprised of atheists, agnostics, the irreligious, and even those caught up in false religion. They have little tolerance for Christian beliefs, Christian values, and especially Christian people. They're the ones out there preaching tolerance for everyone except for Christians. And we're seeing this today in the political among the politicians, I should say, and the media. They lie through their teeth. They purposely misrepresent the facts. They ruin the character and the careers of responsible and patriotic people. And they do everything in their power to silence the truth. And they're not doing this just to Christians, but they are doing it especially to Christians. And if you are actively living by faith in God, then this cannot be hidden, and everyone will see this. And some will not say anything. Others may admire you and even ask you questions. But there will be many, and increasingly so, who will hold you in contempt. And this becomes part of the cross that you and I have to bear in our discipleship to Christ. The fact is, people do and will say all kinds of things about us. But the real target there is not us. The real target is Jesus. Because the world rejects God and rejects His Son and rejects the truth and what the truth says about them, there is a bitter contempt among those people for those who identify with this Jesus who says these things, who speaks the truth. And the fact is, if you listen to what's going on today, if you listen to the media and the secularists and the humanists and kind of those with that modern worldview, everyone sees themselves today as being very progressive and enlightened and forward-thinking and very justified in their position. But Jesus and His apostles taught that the world is backward, is blind, and is groping in moral darkness, that the world is wrong, and not only wrong, but is condemned for being wrong, and not only condemned for being wrong, but is facing an awful punishment for that condemnation. So it's one thing to identify with Jesus the man, what He did. It's another thing, though, to agree with His condemnation of the godless world and to repeat those conclusions as part of our own belief system. That's where we get into trouble right there. If we were applauding Jesus' miracles and, you know, His goodness and all those things, no one would have a problem with that. That's not what's happening. We agree with His conclusions. We don't just agree with His healings. We agree with what He said about the world. And this is what Jesus said about the world, in essence. Luke 16, verse 15, He says, "You," really meaning the world, "are those who justify yourselves in the sight of men. But God knows your hearts, for that which is highly esteemed among men is detestable in the sight of God." By the way, this is a verse I use whenever someone does say, "Well, God knows my heart." I say, "Well, yep, that's true. God does know that." And if you're not with God and not supporting God, then God finds your heart detestable against Him. So don't pull the God knows my heart thing, is what I would say to someone who used that. Don't pull that card and play that ace there, because that's just not going to work. But the thing is, not only did Jesus say these words, but we agree with those words. And that makes us targets. Again, if Jesus simply went around healing people and performed miracles for people and spoke clever parables, the world wouldn't have any problem with that. But Jesus makes it personal. He basically says in so many words, you, the world, are in sin. And not only are you in sin, but you're in sin against me. Your sin is not against yourselves. Your sin is not against some religion or against some ideology. Your sin is against me personally. And I can and will bring you to judgment for those sins. But at the same time, he's saying, but I can save you from all that. And I want to save you from all that. But I need you to listen to me. I need you to listen and obey what I have to say. And those who do listen to Jesus have to come out of the world and change their identity, because only the truth will set anyone free. And that means we need to let go of our truths, what we thought was true, what we wanted to be true, what people told us were true. We need to let go of those truths and cling tenaciously onto the truth, which is what Jesus provides for us. Even so, there's a price to pay for standing up for the truth, for standing up for our Lord. There's a price to pay. And we need to ask ourselves, are we willing to do that? And make it more personal. Are you willing to do that? And make it even more personal. Not just are you willing to in some hypothetical situation that may never come about, but are you going to do that? Because you have to have that in your heart as part of your attitude, just as I have to have in mine. I know where I stand with the Lord, and I am going to maintain that stance. I'm going to maintain that position even in the face of bitter opposition. That has to be decided ahead of time, because you're not going to make that decision in the midst of the confrontation. Someone might say, well, I haven't had any problem with my non-Christian friends and family members. Well, maybe not yet. But rest assured that the era of toleration for the Christian faith is quickly changing. And if you haven't had that animosity that I've been talking about here yet, you are probably in for a rude awakening, probably sooner than you think. Because the world is, again, not growing friendlier toward you. It is growing hateful toward you. Well, as you see on the screen, there's a price to pay for following Christ, but there's also a great reward. Matthew chapter 5, verse 10 through 12, Jesus himself in the Beatitudes says, blessed are those who have been persecuted for the sake of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. And blessed are you when people insult you and persecute you and falsely say all kinds of evil against you because of me, he says. Rejoice and be glad, for your reward in heaven is great, for in the same way they persecuted the prophets who were before you. And if you need a refresher on that, just go into and read about Jeremiah and Ezekiel and Daniel and the others who were most certainly persecuted for what they stood up for. We don't rejoice in our suffering. That's not what Jesus is asking us to do. Don't rejoice because you're suffering. Rejoice because you're in good company, is what he is saying. And rejoice because you will be vindicated if you hold on to that truth and don't back down. You will be vindicated. And you won't just be vindicated by me or your friends or your church members. More importantly, God himself, Christ himself, will vindicate you in the end before your enemies. So he says of that, rejoice in that. But all that takes great faith, because you have to believe who Jesus is. You have to believe what he said about himself. You have to believe that he spoke the absolute truth. You have to believe that he does have all authority in heaven and on earth. You have to believe that he will bring judgment. You have to believe that he will vindicate you if you remain faithful, but it may not be in this lifetime, but that he will do it. So we may get our feelings hurt when someone speaks ill of our Lord or our faith. maybe of our church, our religion. But Jesus Christ, the Son of God, endured that on a regular basis. And the difference is that he knew no sin, and he was undeserving of any evil accusation. There might be times when those speak evil of us, those who speak evil of us, are actually correct in their assessment of us, because we are not perfect people, and sometimes we do evil. But that was never the case with Christ. On the other hand, Jesus did not live in a religious vacuum where there were no competing religions, no competing theologies, no competing worldviews. Rather, he lived in a powder keg of zealous fanaticism, political rhetoric, and mind-numbing spiritual ignorance. Doesn't that sound familiar? That is the world that we are quickly entering into right now, today. We are entering into a world that is filled with zealous fanaticism, political rhetoric, and mind-numbing spiritual ignorance. People are not only illiterate biblically, they don't know what the Bible teaches. People don't care what the Bible teaches. They don't care about what is true. They don't care about how they destroy you or what they say about you. And I'm being very generalized in my statements. Of course, there are people who do care, but there are so many more who don't. And if the divinely revealed truth that Jesus spoke received the reaction it did then when he spoke it, we should expect the same thing today. When we speak divinely revealed truth, we should expect, given that volatile climate, we should expect people to respond very similarly to the way they did with Jesus. And yet, while many rejected Jesus in his day, some who heard that truth believed in it and obeyed it and sacrificed everything, including, up to and including their very lives for that truth. And that also is still happening all around the world today. Fact is, people are still calling Jesus names, horrible names, awful names, insulting names, wicked names. And in due time, every single name caller will be summoned to the tribunal of Christ to give account for what he or she has said. Every knee will bow. But there's one last remarkable fact as we close this lesson. After 3 years of being called a heretic and a blasphemer and a liar and a deceiver and a friend of Satan, Jesus, while dying on the cross, in Luke 23, verse 34, says, "Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they are doing." Now, keep in mind, this is not an unconditional blanket forgiveness. But this is forgiveness nonetheless. Really what Jesus is saying is, when they hear the gospel and they come to their senses, and Father, when they come to you, because it's the Father that they're really angry at, and Jesus recognized that, when they come to you for begging you for forgiveness, Father, please forgive them. And the same opportunity still awaits every name caller today. When they hear that gospel and they respond to that gospel and they come to their senses, you and I have to believe that Jesus will receive them as his own and will forgive them and will add them to us. Remember what we came out of. We came out of that same environment. And now we want others to come into our environment, so to speak. We want others to be saved. I chose purposely in this lesson to stay away from any specific incidents or political references, things that are happening specifically in our world today, on purpose so that we could focus on Christ. I do encourage you, however, to keep your eyes and ears wide open over the coming weeks. As this lesson rolls around in your mind, think about what's going on, and you will hear all these things that I talked about being done today against Christians. If there's anyone here this evening that needs to respond to our message, that wants to respond, I should say, that looks forward to responding to such a good message, if you need to come forward this evening, this will be your time to do so as we stand and sing the song Richard selected for us.